Do I need to be close to this or?
Yeah, it's better.
Well, how am I supposed to have my laid back swagger if I can't, if I have to be like this all the time? Well,
you can hold it.
It's all right. Good for you. This works.
Pick a favorite 80s song. Like, what is it? Come on. Like, I know you have some because you were singing them at the gym today. Welcome, my friends, to A Little Brighter podcast, where we interview a seemingly ordinary person with a seemingly ordinary hobby and find the extraordinary love and passion that makes our world a little brighter. I'm your host, Nicole Graff. So today we are interviewing Micah Carlson. And Micah, welcome to the studio.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
It's good to have you here. Can you tell us what your hobby is?
I collect pound puppies.
Today I have brought my younger brother, Micah, into the studio. With only 2 years between us, growing up, we were definitely partners in crime. Sneaking out at night, egging cars, hiding in cornfields, and swimming in canals. It's safe to say we have a connection. As of this recording, we are living in the same neighborhood, working together, carpooling to CrossFit, and we are watching our own kids growing up as best friends. I loved the opportunity to sit down and reminisce with him about our family and his hobby, which, by the way, is not collecting pound puppies.
I'm kind of a car geek. I love cars, modern, old, muscle cars. I love it. It's awesome.
Okay. Tell me how your obsession with cars started.
Started as a kid. I always loved cars. I always got a kick out of just seeing a shiny hot rod or a muscle car when I was growing up. First car poster I had was a 56 Chevrolet, and it's always been one of my all-time favorite cars. But what kind of enhanced all of that was my cousin, who was about, I don't know, 8 years older than I am, moved in next to us, and he's a car guy too. And it grew from there.
So your cousin, what's your cousin's name?
It's Jerry.
Okay. So Jerry is 8 years older than you. So
I guess he could be 20 years older than me, but I don't keep track. He keeps track of all those numbers that I don't. Yeah. So.
But I mean, it's safe to say that he was quite a bit older than you. And so like when you were like a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old, he was like 16, 17.
Yeah.
Like you probably idolized him a little bit, you know, in your youth. And
yeah, but don't tell him that.
We'll keep that between us.
This one time we were riding in Vernal, which is our hometown, and we stopped at 7-Eleven to get a drink, and somebody that my cousin knew pulled up in a 60-something Nova. I don't even remember what, but anyway, so we both pulled out on Main Street about the same time, and the race was on. We proceeded to go from light to light, racing up Main Street in Vernal, Utah. And it was the most awesome experience. And I was only 13 or 14 at the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we were headed up Main Street and we were probably pushing 70 miles an hour. And we got too close to some people in front of us and the Nova that we were racing. He locked him up and actually did a 180 right in Main Street.
Oh my gosh.
And was facing backwards and his car stalled. So And we were just like, we got, and so anyway, my cousin like, I got to get out of here. And so he like takes off down this side street and I'm like, don't we need to help him? He's like, no, he's on his own, man. We're out of here. So the guy finally got his car started and took off and I loved it. It was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
What's the fastest you've ever gone in a car?
I think I've probably been pretty close to 135, really? Maybe. Yeah.
Do you get scared like when you're going that fast, or is it
a little
like
bit
a
more
thrill?
Now as you get older, you think of the consequences more than you do when you're young. I like the speed, but for me, I like the initial power of takeoff
off the line.
Yeah, burning the tires, and there's nothing like just winding up an engine and just hearing the roar and the tires squealing and the smoke bellowing out of the tires. I love it. It's so awesome.
That's awesome. Give me a little bit of background about how you actually got into restoring old cars.
Well, it all goes back to my cousin again, because we were next door neighbors. He said, we can find you a car. And in fact, back in the day, he knew where just about every GTO was in the land. Northeastern Utah, Roosevelt, Vernal, and several really small towns in that.
To say he's obsessed he's
probably
is
a little
speaking
obsessed,
very lightly.
Anyway, so he knew where a car was. We found a 65 Tempest that had the engine had already been rebuilt, and so some of the expensive parts of restoring it were already out of the way. And we picked that car up for $300, brought it home, and the ridicule and persecutions began because this car was in rough shape. The body filler on the back quarters was about 2 inches thick. It was rusted through. It had house carpet, like brown house carpet in it. So it was just
a mess.
It was not a looker by any stretch of the imagination. So anyway, we did what they call a clone, which is that it was a Tempest, but we restored it as a GTO. And we started about when I was a little over 15. I worked a couple hours before school, and then I went to school, and then I went to work on my car in the evenings. And that went on for about a year and a half until I finished it about halfway through my senior year. And yeah. It was
a beautiful car when you were done.
It was awesome. It pretty much shut people up because of they couldn't believe I took what we did and did with it. I had tons of help, my cousin Jerry, and then my really good friend Vance up there, who's a mechanical genius. He walked us through the whole process.
Yeah,
and so
really patient guy.
Yeah. he's super patient. Yeah.
Yeah. So especially to take a 16-year-old or 15-year-old and walk him through something that detailed. I love hearing Micah dust off the old memories of restoring the GTO. He giggled at Vance's subtle sense of humor and busted up over Jerry's, well, not so subtle firecracker prank. As you listen to him, you can hear in Micah's voice the countless hours and years they spent together hold a very special place in his heart. With this hobby, you really mention a lot about your family, like your brothers, your cousin, your friend. Like, do you feel like that maybe that's more of the connection to this than the actual cars?
For sure. I mean, you create friendships and stuff through things. It's no different than a book club or working out or whatever you get your go from. You know, you create relationships with people, and my wife's the social one in our family, and you know, she makes friends wherever we go, but I kind of just still have my old friends that I grew up with, my brothers, my cousins, and you know, those people that I associated with the cars and that, because those were, well, there's a lot of depth to that. Those are my escape days, I think, because that's back when my parents were getting divorced, right at that same time. And so I think for me, my escape was my car and my friends, and that was where I got away.
Yeah, it so, kept you sane.
For sure.
When yeah. everything else was falling apart, it was like that was the one thing you could just...
Well, and it's the thing you can, you know, you can get in and fix things. You can, with your hands, you know. And so, like, when I'm working on my car, I know it can be fixed. And even a part that I don't know how to do, and I'm thinking, well, I don't know if I ever can fix this. Here comes my buddy Vance, and, you know,
yeah.
there's always a way. And so, anyway, I'm just hands-on. And so when you get hands-on like that, you just feel like you can fix stuff.
Yeah. I grew up with you guys and just seeing you guys. Sorry. I'm getting all nostalgic. But yeah, I mean, I remember being in the back of Jerry's car, like, scared to death because he's just barreling, like, you know, 100 miles an hour down the La Pointe Road. And I'm thinking, my life is over, you know, and I can't get out of this car. It really is about, like, the relationships that you build. And I think that we put sentimental memories to objects that remind us of those times of our life or trying to figure things out or cope with things. So I think that there's a lot of truth to that.
It's a little embarrassing to say, but that was the whole thing, because my home life was so in a mess when I was growing up that I worried about that around other people and how they would accept me. And so I looked for that outside source, like a car, to fill the gap, thinking, yeah, people think I'm cool if I have this, you know, because I was worried about the stigma of being from a divorced family and so forth. And
yeah.
and it really played on my self-esteem, I guess, if sure. you want to say. But anyway, so I thought that very thing, you know, I'm going to be the man. I'm going to be driving up to school in this car. And by the way, I was the man when I drove up to school in that car, but anymore, it doesn't matter, because it's not for the acceptance of others. It's just, I just do it because I love it.
Refresh my memory on this, because at the time I was driving that Mercury Zephyr.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I remember it is that I gave you that car so that you could sell it.
I did.
To use. Is that right or well, not? Like, I don't know if I made that up in my mind or if there was.
Well, here's the backstory to that. That car was actually Grandma and Grandpa Perry's, if you remember.
Yeah.
And where you and I thought and believed that it was your car and then my car, when I got it, I did a tune-up on it and sold it for like $700 to help to pay for my car. I found out later that Grandma and Grandpa were super mad about that because they still figured it was their car. And so they figured since I had this other car, they wanted that car back to give to our cousin Lance.
Somebody else.
And I'm like, I sold that car. It's gone. And anyway, they weren't too happy about that. So
I'm trying to figure out how you got the title.
I don't
like,
know.
How did you sell a car with, if it was, the title was still in their name?
Like, I don't know. I guess.
I don't know. Somewhere it's illegally.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I sold the car. And it was a sore spot with people. I had people give me a hard time about selling the car to go on a mission. They thought I was stupid. But to me, it wasn't that big a deal because I sold it to my cousin and from Vance. They kind of did a joint buyout on it. They had already promised me that it would be there for me when I got back home, that I could buy it back for them. And I did buy it back when I got home. And they actually put a bigger engine in it and a new transmission and few things like that while I was gone. So when I got back, it was even better than it was before. But I didn't really want to do mechanicking anymore. And I think it was more that I didn't want to do it as a living, but I kind of shied away from it altogether. I tried to get away from it.
Hopefully, my grandparents aren't rolling over in their graves because we sold their car. But in my defense, I genuinely thought it was my car, and I was just being charitable to my little brother, which in turn worked out a little ways down the road when Micah decided to sell his precious GTO to go on his LDS mission to South Korea. When Micah returned home, I was surprised when he decided against mechanicking as a profession. But when I asked him about it, he said his heart just wasn't in it for a long-term career. Okay, so from here, I want to talk a little bit about your latest project or any other projects maybe you've worked on over the years.
I haven't done any of my own projects basically since that first GTO, but I recently kind of got back into it. My friend Vance had this 82 Chevy pickup that he bought brand new off the line. So he had this brand new truck and he replaced everything in it to make it basically a hot rod. And he called it the See You Bye Bye. It was on his license plate and it went like crazy. And so I always loved that truck and always thought, well, you know, I'd love to have a little C10 pickup like that. So anyway, I found one about a year and a half ago down in Vegas, bought it, and I've been working on restoring that. I pulled the engine out, tore down the whole front clip and repainted, rebuilt, put a big block 454 in it, rebuilt the transmission, and rebuilt the rear end, put a posi track in it. So
it moves.
It will. It's kind of, well, it does. I mean, I've had a few test drives. It's still not street legal because they're still working on it. But yeah, it'll light them up.
Nice. Let's just talk a little bit about costs. Like to do this kind of a hobby, I mean, what are the costs that are kind of involved with that?
Well, it's super expensive for sure. It's become a rich man's game. If you go back to the car I did, I bought that 65 GTO for $300. And by the time I was done with interior, body, paint, wheels, I was only in about $5,000.
Yeah.
So if I was to do that same thing today, I would easily drop $25,000 if I could find the car, because there's no way I would ever pay $300 for that car now.
Yeah. Just too rare. Just
the rarity. But what's happened is that people have discovered what they have. So you have the so-called reality TV that has created a buzz about that stuff.
Yeah, like that movement, like the Chip Foose, the, you know, who, what's the other one? The three guys, the three English guys.
Well, that's different because they talk about European cars, but
they still talk cars. But they, like, yeah, they talk cars. Like, I mean, they talk cars, and it's this obsession, you know.
But yeah, there's tons of reality TV right now that does car shows, and I've actually lost interest in them because mm-hmm. of the reality aspect. I don't like what's supposed to be real TV is obviously scripted, and yeah. It's so annoying to me. But what it has done is created an awareness with people of what they have in their barn and in their backyard and all of those things. And so I don't even think I could find that same car for $10,000 maybe.
Yeah.
And for sure not the condition it was in.
Yeah, and like same thing like how you were talking about the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, the movie with the Dukes of Hazzard, those cars literally went from $8,000 to $60,000 almost overnight for the Dodge Charger mm-hmm. because of that movie. And so it really just created awareness with people of what they had and what was there.
I always ask everybody this at the end of their interview, but do you have a secret hobby or something that maybe people don't know about you that you like to do?
I love to pole dance. I'm just kidding. No.
I would love to see that.
I think that lately, something I could probably say is mountain biking. I've kind of picked that up over the last couple of years. I don't go a whole lot, but I try to go, and I actually really enjoy that. Something that I've taken to and I find a lot of joy in. It's a lot of fun.
kind of the same thing, though? It depends on who's with you.
Well,
like, you want to go with somebody.
It goes two ways. You want to go with somebody, and I've actually go with my brothers a lot, but I've gone several times by myself, and I'm fine to do that too. I like being out there. I like the challenge of it. I don't like so much pedaling uphill, but I love coming downhill, you know, and the challenge of learning how to jump and just getting comfortable on your bike so that you can go over new terrain and you can have new trails that you experience. And I don't know, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So
that's good. Well, thank you for being here. I appreciate you being so open, and I'm excited to get your episode out.
Okay.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of A Little Brighter Podcast. Our podcast is produced by Jessica Niemann and hosted by yours truly, Nicole Graff. If you are interested in being in a future episode and sharing what makes your world a little brighter, please shoot us an email at alittlebrighterpodcast@gmail.com. We will be back this time next week. Hope you will tune in. And in the meantime, keep shining.